is that? Alrighty, friends, we are here at the 2018 PRI show in Indianapolis, getting an audio level check. I have to bring that down just a touch. Okay, that's probably better. All right. All right, friends, we're at the 2018 PRI show in Indianapolis doing a live stage recording of our podcast called V8 Radio. And I'm joined by our esteemed co-host, Mr. Mike Cueball Clark.
How you doing, Kev?
It's good to actually see you this time.
Right on.
And also joined by Rod Huebner, who's a member of the V8 Speed and Resto team and also V8 TV team. And here at the PRI show, we've been shooting television and video for the past 3 days, but we thought it might be kind of fun as the show winds down to shoot an episode of our podcast, which is normally audio only.
Correct.
But this time, we've added the next dimension of a visual.
And Rod has the distinction of being our very first guest.
Our very first live in person guest.
Live in person guest.
Yeah, right on.
Honored, absolutely honored.
Well, as the honored guest, it's your job to come up with an adjective for this show.
You know, I would probably say this would be an exasperating episode. I've been working hard for the last 4 days. We've had a ton of interviews. We've had a ton of folks on stage, some absolutely amazing roundtables, and we've had a great time getting out and visiting some of the vendors and seeing the new products that were out. So I think that as we wind down day three of PRI 2018, we're all pretty exasperated.
Sold.
Can't disagree with that.
Yeah, that was a win right there.
Absolutely.
It was exasperating just listening to that. I'm impressed. All right, well, yeah, for sure. We are here at the PRI show, and for those who've never been, this is the performance racing industry show. And it's an industry-only trade show. Once again, the general public is not allowed in, which is why media folks such as ourselves come here and record stuff to share with the people at home all things racing. And so, Mike, you're an industry trade show veteran.
Indeed I am, Kevin. And I'm a welder.
Yes. So why don't you tell us what your impressions are, because you've not seen a whole lot of this show.
No, I've seen a heck of a lot of cool race trailers, I'll tell you what. I did walk through the convention center on my way in here, and just a little bit I got was really, really over the top. It's a mechanical dream.
Yeah.
Seeing all these cool race parts here. And as far as the eye can see, everything that there is to offer.
Well, what's really cool for me about this show is it's all things racing, and you learn here what people are actually racing.
Right on, yeah.
You know, because you think, yeah, sure, the big stuff, open wheel, mm-hmm. IndyCar, you know, drag racing, NHRA, but you find people racing stuff that you wouldn't even believe. But I guess, you know, it's true what they say. If there's two of anything, people will race them.
Exactly. That's how you get barstool racing and lawnmower racing.
That's right. People racing for how quickly they can turn our show off. You know? Rod, what do you think of PRI this year? You got to spend some time on the floor.
I did. You know, I was super impressed with the quantity of new products that are out there. You know, the innovation and the creativity of what people are developing and how they're bringing it out. And you know, I think you mentioned earlier that it's really about all things going faster, and some of the technology that has been developed is just bringing everything to the next level. The ability, some of the machines out there that they show, you know, there's the CNC machines, they've got boring machines, crank machines, and they're utilizing those to build these monster one-off billet aluminum blocks that are just, you know, absolutely amazing. You know, obviously tune in to some of our episodes as you'll be able to see some of the John Kazi and Jessel and Mike Moran motors that came out. But for me, it's probably the new products that I enjoy seeing, the innovation that's coming out.
You know, the technology has allowed for fantasies to become reality. And what I mean by that is our friends over at JE Pistons created an award. It's called the Masters of Motors Award. And what they did is looked at, you know, all these different ways people compete with cars, the car shows and whatnot. But they noticed that nobody was really opening the hoods and giving people the thumbs up to, you know, what engine's under the hood. So the Masters of Motors, of course, JE Pistons makes pistons. So of course, they're centered around motors. But they had a very cool team of judges that are very active in the industry. So David Freiberger from Roadkill and Hot Rod. This year, Jeff Smith was a judge here at the PRI show. Of course, former Hot Rod editor and Chevy High Performance magazine, a lot of other different motorsports publications. Brian Lones, who was with Bang Shift and now is going to be the anchor for Fox's NHRA coverage, which is very cool.
Yeah.
And then who's the fourth judge? He's from MotoIQ, right?
Yeah, he was from MotoIQ, I believe.
His name escapes me. But they had a bunch of different categories of engines that they were going for, and then one master. And the engine that won the Master of Motors Award, the Innovation Award, was essentially hand-built, obviously using machines, but it was done by Dan Jezel, Jezel Valve Train. And this is a block design and a valve train design that he purely dreamed up in his head. Wow. So it's not like it's a 427 Chevy that has parts on it. This is the only one of its kind.
Huh.
Similar to the Masters of Motors Award that was presented at SEMA when Joe Schubeck won.
Oh, yeah.
But this time, it's a billet aluminum block, you know, billet heads. And his design criteria was that he wanted to line up that push rod so that the lifter cup went straight up the push rod and straight to the rocker and straight down the valve, and nothing is skewed or canted or anything. So he calls it, what's the name of the engine rod? The Equal 8?
The Equal 8, yeah, I think that's what it was.
So both sides of the engine are perfectly symmetrical. There's not one cylinder that's leading the others.
Really?
Like you find on, it's crazy. And to Rod's point, the technology we have today with CNC machines and the ability to make things that just don't exist out of, you know, anything, it took him 7 years, but it allowed him to build this one-of-a-kind engine. And it was a great, great story about how it won the Masters of Motors competition, because that engine really wasn't supposed to be here. And his friends were giving him a hard time, saying, yeah, that thing in the garage that you're working on, you know, it's getting close. You should bring that to PRI. And he's like, yeah, it hasn't even run yet. Why do I want to bring that to PRI? You're crazy. Because, you know, the Jezel company has been making high-performance rockers and valve train parts for 40 years. And he wasn't going to present this as it was an available product to buy. It was his personal, personal project. So finally, enough of his buddies said, you should take that, you know. So he brought it here. And then I think his brother got an email saying, hey, they got this Masters of Motors thing. Maybe you should sign up. Oh, I don't know. I'm not going to enter this in competition. It's not even finished. So he signs up. And he wins.
My gosh.
Yeah.
What a great platform that Masters of Motors is for a guy like that to display that engine for everyone to see.
Right, exactly. And it's fun because the even, you know, more interesting was the number two, the runner-up, if you will, in that class, was another specially designed full custom billet V8 engine that was built by Mike Moran at Mike Moran Motorsports.
Oh boy.
And this is the one that's been all over the internet and in a lot of publications, because it made 5,400 horsepower, right, somewhere around there. And Jezel helped Moran design that one.
Really?
Yes. So Jezel helped him with a lot of the design aspects of the engine. So when the Masters of Motors judge team was scouring the PRI show, they landed on this, you know, 5,000 plus horsepower billet turbo engine and Jezel's hand-built engine. They say, who's going to win this? You know, because they're both equally worthy.
Mm-hmm.
So the interesting, fun part of that was they gave the nod to Jezel, and Mike Moran immediately hugged him and said, you picked the right guy.
Good. That's great.
Showed gratitude and recognition and respect. Sure. So we were joking. It was the student becomes the master, and the master quickly showed the student what it was all about.
That's all right.
Yeah. So we were fortunate here. Our location, for those listening, is at the VATV PRI stage. So in the Lucas Oil Stadium, they carved us a little spot to be able to do interviews and shoot some feature videos. And we had the Masters of Motors trophy here, and Jezel and some of the judges, Lones and Freiberger, they came here yesterday and presented this award, and we got a chance to see that. That's an 80-pound billet trophy.
That's an impressive-looking trophy.
Yeah. So without the technology advancing like it is, you wouldn't be able to do that kind of stuff. So And again, it's kind of ridiculous. It's not going to be a production engine, and you know, nobody really needed it. It's just like the ultimate expression of a guy playing in a hobby that he does best. And next spring, he's taking it to Bonneville, right?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. Well, Speed Week is in the fall, but the idea is to get it running. And do you remember what the car is that's going to go into?
I do not remember what he said that it was going in.
Yeah, but they're going to run it.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah, yeah.
I think one of the things that impressed me the most about the Master Motors was the diversity of the different engines that were entered into the competition. You know, they had some of the best appearing, the best naturally aspirated. So they had a wide variety of different choices. And, you know, a Honda motor came in, some of the new Toyota, the J platforms were there. And just absolutely impressive with what they've been able to do, not only from an appearance perspective, but also the mechanical knowledge and the horsepower that they're putting out of these machines. Just super impressive.
Yeah, totally. So, and of course, we were very fortunate that they came over to our stage and hung out with us because over the past couple of days, we've been hosting interviews and doing some roundtables, and I guess a roundtable discussion was never the appropriate title because we don't have a table and we have nothing that's round. More of a panel discussion. And an interesting thing happened here. So Mike and I, you know, we were talking before on previous episodes of VA Radio about, you know, a particular moment, you know, that occurs at a show. So at the SEMA show, we might have a SEMA moment where something just kind of special happens. And Rod had one here.
Do tell, Rod.
Well, I'm going to set this up. We had a panel of what we call the legends of NMCA. So some NMCA racers, the original street car drag race guys, and our panel consisted of David Freiberger, who was at Hot Rod at the time, Nick Scavo, Bill Trovato, Gary Rowe, who else am I missing? Tony Bischoff from Bischoff Racing Engines. I think that's everybody, right? Yeah. And they're telling their stories about what it was like to be in the fastest street car competitions. And Rod's got this look, and I knew something was going on. So Rod, take it away.
Well, you know, I've always been a car guy, but I was always a pretty entry level hot rodder. You know, do it yourself.
Right.
And I went to a World Street Car Shootout and was just absolutely in awe seeing these door slammers running, you know, 8s, 9s, 10 second quarter miles in full steel body cars. Some of them were 10-5 tires, some of them were the big tire cars, but I looked at that and I said, that's what I want to do next. That's the car that I want to build. And that series and those guys I've always looked up to. So it was kind of like, not necessarily starstruck because they're great down-to-earth normal guys, but it was just that, holy cow, look at the legends that are sitting up here that not everybody knows about because they're not quite to that level yet, or they're not quite as astounding as the Sonny Leonards and the Jessels and the John Cozzies, but these guys were innovators in the day. They were doing things that people wouldn't think of to get their car down that track faster, and that's what inspired me to start my Pro Street build. It was awesome to see the guys and to have some conversation with them, as Nick would say, hey, I'm Nick freaking Scavo. So it was awesome to get to spend some time with them.
It was very cool.
That's terrific.
Yeah. Well, and interestingly enough, we had Caleb Stryker here at the show. And Caleb works in our V8 Speed and Resto shop. Mm-hmm. And he's 18. Is he 19 yet?
Just turned 19.
Just turned 19. And he's been working with us for a couple of years now. Started off in the co-op program at his high school.
Right.
In machining and started working for us. And he does all kinds of mechanical work and different things. But he's also a dirt track racer. Him and his brother and his family had a team and they currently race. So Caleb comes here to see all those racing parts. And he stood there and watched that whole seminar and just loved it. And I didn't know, he's a younger guy. We're talking about events from 25 years ago.
Right.
And names that he might not know, and I'm trying to think that, does this have any effect, but he was affected.
Very much so, yeah. He said the same thing. He said, I'm more starstruck with these guys than I would be, any NASCAR driver or Richard Petty or any of those guys, because, those guys seem like they're just up on a pedestal, and these are real down-to-earth guys that like I said, they're innovators.
Yeah, they
blaze
the trail. Yeah.
They blaze the trail, and they set the stage for what is now, you know, the streetcar scene that's hot and heavy. I mean, everywhere you look, it's no prep, it's fastest mm-hmm. streetcar, it's outlaws, it's things of that sort. And those guys were the pioneers of that, and being able to see that, and you know, Caleb at his young age thinking, wow, those are the guys that would be on TV right now had they been doing this kind of stuff, and
right.
people had the interest back in late 80s, early 90s when it was hot in that scene.
Yeah, that's great that events that happened that long ago still affect the younger guys that are coming up now.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that really gives me hope for the whole street scene and the whole hobby and industry in general.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, and I'm not going to say anything, but now we've added Rod to our V8 radio show, who also has an unfinished project in the garage.
The answer to your question, Kevin, is
actually
no,
two.
It is not done. My answer is not complete.
Well, now you can pick on him because he started that Pro Street project because of these guys, but that was farther
is
ago.
Right?
Yeah. It's going on probably 25 years.
Come on, Rod. Mine's only on 3 years.
but you got to remember that I did build a car in between there,
as well as
I have another one that's on the verge of hopefully being finished. So I'm on two cars. That one just kind of got moved
right,
aside.
Right, you're on the Sunbeam.
Yes.
Too, right?
Yep.
Yeah, you're right.
Well, and plus, you know, the Camaro that kind of always stayed alive and did power tour after power tour after power tour.
Yeah,
I'm not picking on him, but I just thought it was kind of funny. You know, the people are going to be like, yeah, you guys are good.
Yeah. You guys got a speed shop and none of you have cars that are done.
Yeah, right. Well, I mean, if I could, if I had the resources to hire our own shop to do something, it would be really special.
It'd be really great.
We might have to look into that.
Yeah, right. Yeah. But right now we have too many great customer cars we have to build, which is a wonderful problem.
Mm-hmm. It's a great problem to have.
Yeah. So about the GTO.
Yes, sir. Well, you got to meet Randy today.
Yes, yeah, so our V8 radio listeners have heard of the elusive Randy,
mm-hmm.
who's a guy who's helping you out with some space
right.
and tools. And
he's not just my imaginary friend, he is real.
And he was here.
Yeah,
flesh and blood.
And so was Rob Veneziano.
Yes.
Yeah.
That was cool. I gave those guys a big thank you for helping you out because, you know.
Yeah, they've both helped quite a bit. Rob with his sandblaster in his shop, took a lot of my parts there. Randy with his expertise trying to help me get my motor together correctly and not, you know, screw it up. So he's been there every step of the way with it. So
yeah.
So it's just as much his project now as it is mine, because I think it's spent more time in his garage than it has in mine.
Yeah,
at
nice.
This point. Yeah. So thanks, Randy.
Yeah, he's very gracious to allow that to happen.
Yeah, he really is. He really is.
Well, this show has been really, really amazing as I think back. We're very fortunate that our friends at PRI allowed us to have this space and do this kind of stuff. We recorded some interviews that the PRI folks, kind of asked us to, which I would have done anyway, absolutely. The PRI organization, you know, it stands for Professional Racing Industry, and we tend to think of racing, you know, as something that's right in front of your hands, you know, wherever you are. But it's a global thing. You know, racing is huge all over the world, mm-hmm. obviously. And they wanted to really put an emphasis on getting some international promoters and international media people to come to the show to bring their take from some of the global markets to Indianapolis here, because this is dominated, you know, by American drag racing and, mm-hmm. you know, American NASCAR circle mm-hmm. track kind of stuff here at the show. And we interviewed a couple gentlemen who are media professionals, one in England and one in Singapore, as a matter of fact, and learned about the extensive types of racing that's going on there. It's a lot of formula stuff, mm-hmm. so F1 through Formula 4 and touring cars and some open wheel stuff and Caterham, like Super 7s. And what I'm finding interesting is that they all came here to talk to us about what we're doing, and I just wanted to hear about what they're doing.
Right, right. That's always the way it goes, isn't it?
Yeah. So to give them a little bit more involvement in the show, kind of right next to us is the Featured Product Showcase. And the Featured Product Showcase is over 400 different items that are in a special display, the full range of product categories. So engine parts, exhaust headers, brake parts, you know, safety gear. And they asked these seven international individuals to be judges and select different featured products from the showcase so that they could again shine some significance on those products and correlate them back to the type of racing that's going on wherever they came from. So it was neat to talk to them, and we spoke with a number of the featured product showcase people as well about new and innovative things, safety gear, even things like we had a seminar on towing safety and hauling. And we were fortunate enough to have a member of the Indiana State Police here as one of our guests to learn about some of the crazy things that he sees. And we finally settled at one of the age-old questions, and that is when people strap down a car in their trailer, you have probably an equal number of people that cross the tie-down straps.
Oh, okay.
And then the other half that point those tie-down straps straight and don't cross them. And Rod already heard all this, so I'll ask you, what do you think is the preferred or correct method?
It sounds like a great trivia question.
Yeah. Well, that only means that I'm going to get it wrong. I would say to cross tie it so it gives you a little lateral stability.
Is this your final answer?
That's my final answer.
Well, there are many, many people that do cross. Mm-hmm. And I think where that came from, and I didn't get a chance, we were talking to Colin McRae from Max Tie Downs. He's the owner of the company, and that's all they do is tie down equipment. And I think where this came from is the chain binders, you know, on heavy equipment, where they crank these things down on these big trailers, and it translated over to the synthetic tie down, which is, you know, your nylon strapping and whatnot. And he and I both agree it is not the proper way to cross them.
Really?
And he gave some great reasons why.
And let's hear it.
One of them is that whenever you cross the straps and put tension on them, the crossed ends are gonna try and spread apart or meet each other, right? So if you hook onto two ends of an axle housing and cross those straps, start to tighten them down, by shortening them, they're gonna try and skip together, right? And as you're tightening them down. Well, what's gonna stop them from coming together all the way but something on your rear end housing?
Okay.
Maybe it's a brake line mount, which would be bad. You might, you know.
That would be unfortunate.
It would be. And what a lot of people do is, you know, they strap this thing down and it's okay in the trailer and they check it, you know, but they hit the road and as they're going down the road, that thing's...
It's moving around.
Yeah, it's
can oscillating. I change my answer?
No. I asked if it was your final answer earlier. So this is a potential safety problem because you can hurt the car.
Right.
The next thing is, as that's happening, the straps are getting longer, so they're losing their tension. And now the thing is going to get
now
free.
Now it's going to move around and
in
cause
the trailer.
Damage and
be
a safety hazard. Okay, and fine.
Another aspect is, what if one of those straps loses its grip? So now you have tension pulling it to the side instead of straight back. And then the other thought that I brought to the table that he agreed with is that you want a nylon strap to be as short as possible so that it minimizes flex. And
makes
by
sense.
Crossing them, you make them longer. So,
all right, you can stop rubbing my nose in it. I'm wrong.
I'm just recapping the findings of our seminar. So there was some pretty neat educational aspects of the seminars and stuff that we did here, in addition to racer story time.
Mm-hmm. Kind of bummed I missed them all.
Well, you may have missed them live, but we did record them.
Oh, duh.
Right. But
yes,
that's
we did.
That's good. You know, creating a little demand there.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah.
Obviously, Rod liked the NMCA deal. What were some of the other stuff that you thought was pretty cool or people to hear from here?
You know, I think the Salt Flats, the fastest people on Earth, was just an amazing seminar. You know, I think that I haven't personally been able to make it out to Bonneville, and it's always been something that's on my bucket list. And to to have some conversation and see the camaraderie between, you know, some of these racers that are in the 400 and 425 mile an hour range, setting records and you know, talking to the chassis guys and just learning about, you know, the fact that the car really doesn't even start putting any horsepower to the ground until it's 2 miles in. You know, they're going the first half of a mile and they're putting 150 to 200 horsepower to the ground.
Really?
And they're gradually drawing that up until where they're putting that 2,000 and 3,000 horsepower to the ground to get to the 427 miles an hour. But, you know, that I thought was just fantastic. And, you know, I think, Kevin, you had mentioned that just the humility of all of the guys that were up here, it was, you know, we're just a bunch of guys that like to get out and have fun, and we like to go fast, but we try to create an environment to where we're all a big family. Mm-hmm. That we're going to be there to help you to do whatever it takes, and we're going to enjoy ourselves, we're going to laugh, and we're going to have fun, but when it comes time to pull up to that line, it's, you know, nose to the grind, all holds barred, safety, preparation, making sure that we're ready to go, and it's all business. Mm-hmm. And then after the run, it goes back, and you know, sometimes we've got to do that full teardown and get ready for the next round. Mm-hmm. Sometimes we've put a great run down, and we don't have to make that next round. But I think that was probably my second favorite one, was just the you know, seeing some of these people that you read about and you see the videos on when you're thinking about the great things that occur in Bonneville.
Mm-hmm. I agree that that Bonneville thing was really, really cool. And there's a term that they were using that Rod was kind of describing. It's calling going one-to-one. Mm. And when your rear tires have finally achieved traction, uh-huh, they're going the same speed as the front tires, and that's called going one-to-one. So Kenny Duttweiler, who's one of our guests, legendary engine builder, and Steve Watt, who built the Speed Demon Land Speed car, Streamliner that's driven by George Poteet, and Chris Rashke from ARP was here, and not only as a you know, a product guy, but he's a crew member on that team.
Is he?
Yeah, he's hands on, I would say hands on, but he's more than knee deep in this stuff. I mean, he lives for Bonneville, and wow, and what he thinks is he tells me all every time he comes back from the salt, we talk about it, and he tells me about how much of a I equate it almost to a like a basketball team. These guys are they're a pit crew, but in the salt, and everybody's got their place, they got their responsibilities, they've got their skills, and another well, we had Keith Dorton, who's also an engine builder, who's been building some salt flat engines, and then Bob, what's his last name? It's the last day of the PRI show. We're talking about. Anyway, this gentleman also runs a Streamliner called Flashpoint. Two Streamliner cars, totally different approaches. The Poteet car is, I think, 2 years old now. It's a fresh design. Mm-hmm. It is state-of-the-art technology. It was engineered to be worked on.
Really?
So, in the early days, you would, you know, to make a Streamliner, you look at your drivetrain and just try and stuff it in the smallest aerodynamic, you know, footprint, if right, you will. Today, they are engineering this thing so that side panels blow off for instant access to subsystems and because they value the time. You don't have a lot of time at Bonneville. If something goes wrong, you're going to break this thing down and fix it. Mm-hmm. And Chris was saying that they could do a full engine change in an hour and 10 minutes, I think, now.
Wow.
In an engine, if you looked at it, it's buried under plumbing and cabling, right, and hydraulics and linkages. So that's the high-tech side. The low-tech side was the Flashpoint car, which was built in the 70s. Hmm. And it, well, so Kenny Duttweiler and the Speed Demon car is turbocharged, fuel injected, 100 channels of data acquisition,
wow,
streaming real time. You know, this is a moon rocket.
Yeah.
The other one, nitro burning Chrysler Hemi. And they're both about the same speed.
Is that right?
Yeah, they were 427 or 430 miles an hour in one, and you know, same with the other one.
Oh my gosh.
And they're both going for 500 at some point.
I see.
But Bob racing the Flashpoint car, he's been racing this thing since the late 70s. And you know, the Poteet car is brand new. So these guys are technically competitors, mm-hmm, in the unlimited Streamliner class, but are so complementary to each other about being on the stage and sharing that experience. And one of the most fascinating things I learned about that unlimited streamliner class, we all look at them as, you know, going very, very fast. They told me the rules.
Really?
Yeah.
Here are the rules for an unlimited streamliner. You ready?
Lay it on me.
You have to have 4 tires.
Okay.
Okay. And they can't be in a row or it's a motorcycle. So it's, you know, 2 and 2.
Gotcha. And that's it.
That's the rules.
That's it. All right. Nothing else.
Easy peasy, lemon squeezy.
There's no engine limit, no size limit, no
really?
Fuel limit, no electronics, no nothing from an aerodynamics perspective. Anything goes.
Yeah, in fact, the Flashpoint car is a long streamliner, and it's got a top fuel style wing on it.
All right.
Big thing sticking up in the air, which he wrecked this thing, what, last year? 2 years ago?
I think 2 years ago.
At 420 some miles an hour and walked away from it. He was, thank God he was fine.
Right.
But that wing actually stopped the car from pencil rolling off into oblivion.
Is that right?
Yeah. And Duttweiler pointed out that at that speed, you're doing a mile every 8 seconds.
Wow.
Wow. That's...
Right? So the wreckage from his crash was about a mile and a half.
I was going to say.
Strewn across the salt.
That's a heck of a cleanup effort.
It was about a 12-second wreck.
Oh, my gosh. That's a pretty pretty small club those guys belong.
Totally.
400-mile-an-hour club?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. And, to Rod's point again, so Duttweiler is genius level, like some of these, the other engine builders and fabricators we were fortunate enough to speak with. And he's casually telling us about how they apply power to this thing. And it's a, he looked at the course, right? And it's a 5-mile course.
Okay.
And most people, like Rod was saying, don't go 1-to-1. They don't get traction until, the end of the second mile. And Duttweiler looked at this and said, hey, we got 5 miles. How come we're not using all of them? Right?
All right.
And no doubt you've seen, videos or pictures in magazines where you've got a push car.
Yeah, right.
Some Ford pickup truck with a big bumper on it. And because, the presumption is that if you're going to go 400 and some or 500 miles an hour, you're not going to have a gear set that's going to allow this thing to start from
a dead stop. Right.
Well, the Speed Demon car now has a 7-speed transmission in it.
Does it really?
And it will power itself from a very low speed. So I think they still use a push rig, but it's only up to 30 miles an hour.
All right.
And then it takes over. And George Poteet's driving, and he's steering and brakes and shifting and all that stuff. But the power application is managed electronically now.
Oh.
So they, like Rod was saying, they ramp in, starting about 100 horsepower. And by the end of the first mile, they're up to about 1,200. And then by the end of the second mile, they're up pushing 2,000.
Oof.
And by the third mile, the fourth one is, kind of the one you really want to get the speed going in. And the fifth, they're at 2,650, 2,700 horsepower.
Holy cow.
But the trick is to manage that just like on a drag strip.
Right. Yeah.
And not be out of control. So they're using all these electronic devices to apply that throttle and manage traction.
That's amazing.
It is.
All that technology that goes into that.
Right.
100 lines of data acquisition.
100 channels right now. But that was technically last year. As they hit the salt this year, it'll be 130 channels.
My goodness.
And Duttweiler said that they've got a guy who sits in the trailer and just downloads that stream and looks at the graphs. And I don't know if you've seen some of that engine management software, but it's different colored, like 1-pixel lines that make these graphs. So it just looks like a macrame, like string, like a loom.
Oh, boy.
And somebody will look at all this stuff and break it down, and Kenny will do about a 15-minute Cliff Notes analysis and make decisions on what they need to change.
Okay.
Is it going to be, some of the application of boost or timing, or is the drive shaft wheel speed ratio slipping, and is the transmission slipping, and they know everything about the car.
Wow.
And then they'll get back out there and do it again.
Huh.
In a sport that you cannot test.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
Because you got to be there.
You got to be there.
You can't go down to your local salt flats.
No. You know? No. You believe that?
Yeah. Right. Tuesday night salt flat testing tune, you know, doesn't exist anywhere. So these are concepts that, you know, you're aware of, but you don't think about until you talk to people that do it. Mm-hmm. So not only do they not have the ability to test, so they have to simulate a lot of this stuff. So Duttweiler's dyno will now run the salt flats course on the dyno electronically.
Oh.
So they load the program in and they hit go, and it ramps itself up and does its power pulls, and the whole time it takes to run the 5 mile course is completed on the dyno.
I see.
And again, Mr. Casual, Mr. you know, genius, but very regular guy, mm-hmm. says, yeah, you know, so after you run this engine up to 9,700 RPM, and then it shifts, and then runs back up to, you know, just about 10,000, it shifts, mm-hmm. and goes through all the gears, and, you know, it's making all kinds of noise, and it's making 2,700 horsepower, and then it ramps down, and then you go in the cell, and you loosen up the valve cover, and you kind of peek underneath there. And if everything's still tight and still there, then you go, okay, let's do it again. It's unbelievable.
That is unbelievable. How casual is that? My Lord.
Right, right. Huh. So that's totally fascinating. And every year, the other variable is that Speed Week is about the same time, but the weather is always different, which means, you know, and at that level, they're monitoring barometric pressure. So it's the surface of the salt for traction and safety, but, you know, altitude and all the rest changes based on weather. So they have no idea how to tune the car suspension and all the rest of it.
Until they get there.
Yeah, I mean, you never know what the conditions on that salt are going to be like. I mean, it's deteriorating year after year. And you know, there's plenty of efforts to revitalize that salt. But, to Kevin's point, you have no idea what it's like.
Right.
You know, what it's like from last year, this year, hard, compact, loose.
Right, yeah. If it's going to rain, if it's wet, slippery. Mm-hmm. So on the more modern cars, they have a lot of adjustability built into the suspension and valving and all the rest. But some of the older cars don't.
Right.
You know, and it's up to the driver.
Oh, boy.
And again, that Flashpoint car, the reason why he wrecked is because in the off season, they were doing some aerodynamics modifications to it. And some cowling on the side was too close to the tire.
Oh.
Well, you think too close to the tire, you know, you'd know that. Well, now when you consider,
it's going to grow. That tire's going to grow.
Yeah, and they have it calculated where his tire grows an inch and an eighth for every 100 miles per hour.
Oh, wow.
And outside diameter, or diameter, I guess.
Right.
So it grew, made contact, it blew the tire, caused an immediate right turn.
Sure.
Blah, 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 and it's over.
Oof. Well, I hope they don't make that mistake twice.
No, it's a learning curve.
Yeah, that's a heck of a curve.
Well, and at the end of the day, that was, you know, kind of what I was hoping we would get is information for somebody who's never done this before.
Mm-hmm.
And what do you tell somebody? And you know how it is when people get excited about something, you know, they do whatever research they do, but people say, how hard can it be? It's a straight line.
400 miles an hour, straight line.
Well, even if it's a slower class and it's only going to be 110 miles an hour, you know.
Yeah, until you experience it, you have no idea what it's going to be like.
Right.
Yeah.
And they were joking that, you know, people say it's just a big drag race. It's not hard. You know, I race quarter mile. I do all that in 8 seconds.
Right.
You know, how hard can it
be
to do it over 5 miles? And they say they can always spot the drag racers.
Really?
Because of they'll take off from the push car or whatever, and they'll get up, the 1-2 shift usually goes okay, the 2-3 shift, the car's pointing backwards.
Oh boy.
And they go, oh look, I'm a drag racer trying to solve it.
Oh,
and it's
awesome.
Because you can't apply power.
Right.
On a drag strip, you know, you make that 2-3 shift, it's off the clutch and foot to the floor.
Yeah.
Out there, you have to
just
understand.
Pedal. Yeah.
So their advice is, if somebody's talking to you, you will need to listen to them.
That makes good sense.
Because they are trying to help you.
Sure.
People are competing against each other, but they are competing with each other against records.
Right. You know? And nobody wants to see anybody get hurt either.
No, absolutely not. You know, especially when you're miles from nowhere. You know, right. The safety crews are top notch. They said when these guys wreck, you know, they might be 15, 20 seconds away. The safety crew's right there, which is kind of mind-boggling too when you think out on that vast 5-mile salt course.
Sure.
So, you know, again, it was super cool to get these firsthand, you know, experience stories about all this.
Yeah.
And as we sit here at the PRI VATV stage, yes, we are in the towing RV trailer section, and these right now, most of them are plain white wrappers because they're trying to find new homes.
Right.
But I asked our salt flat racers, what is their sport missing? In the sense that you go to a NASCAR race and you know, you got the Tide car and you got the DuPont car and the NASCAR, you know, the Daytona 500 is brought to you by, you know, whatever you know, manufacturer sponsor. And I said, you don't see that at Bonneville. You don't see Speed Week, you know, brought to you by Right Guard. You know, and is this what they want? And they all said, no.
Really?
Yeah, right.
They don't want any of the sponsorship.
No.
They want to keep it pure.
They want to keep it pure. And I think a lot of it is, you know, if you bring a lot of money into the sport, you bring people that didn't kind of come in organically.
Sure. I can understand that.
Yeah.
You want it to be your thing.
Right.
And you don't want a corporation taking over and changing everything the way that it's been for as long as it's been.
Right, and maybe putting in rules that are motivated by a TV audience or selling T-shirts, you know, or that kind of nonsense. Mm-hmm. So the idea of, you know, there's a lot of people that go to the salt and spectate, but again, it's not like the stands at Daytona, you know.
Right. Well, like Rod, that's a bucket list item for me as well. I'd love to go to Bonneville.
I've been there, but I was too young. You know, I think I was 7 or 8 or so.
Right?
And we stood out there and I looked at it and I went, wow.
Right.
But I, you know,
a little young to appreciate it.
Totally. Yeah. So that was definitely a high point, was to talk with those guys.
Right on.
Yeah. And there was a lot of them. We did an engine builder panel with, as Rod mentioned, Keith Dorton and John Kazi, guys who are just totally different level. And there's a fun John Kazi story from last year where here's a guy who doesn't accept anything that's just given to him as the definitive answer to anything.
All right.
He's always looking, saying, why don't we move this? Or why don't we change this? Or why does this happen? And I'm sure you're familiar with the Engine Masters Challenge, which eventually turned into a magazine and a web show and everything else.
Right.
It used to be an issue of popular hot rodding, I think, as we started.
Mm-hmm.
I actually covered one of those events for Hot Rod at Bill Mitchell's Hardcore Racing Engines on Long Island many years ago. But Kazi was going to build an engine for this. And, you know, you think big block Chevy or Chrysler Hemi or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
He built a 1958 Mercury.
Really?
Right. An MEL engine. That was a trivia question, wasn't it? The MEL? Or no, the FE was the trivia.
The FE, right.
Well, the FE was Ford Edsel. MEL is Mercury Edsel Lincoln.
Ah.
Damn, I let a trivia question out.
Jot that one down.
Yeah, that one's gone. You can't reuse it.
I'll forget that one. But who builds those? You know, nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And what he ended up doing to make power was that he called it a head gasket, but it was like an inch thick, and billet aluminum.
Wow.
It allowed him to completely redesign the combustion chamber and the way the valves sit against the head, because he put them in this giant plate and sunk that into the top of the cylinders, and designed his own compression ratio and everything, and moved all of it. I mean, so there is nothing that you hand this guy that he won't look at it and say, you know, if we change that valve angle, or we move this port, or we cut this in half and turn it the other way, it'll do better, right?
Yeah.
And last year, he was working on that MEL engine, and he knew most engine builders appreciate the wave pulses that you get above the valve. So we all look at a carburetor or fuel injection system, an intake, and we envision that the piston goes down and the valve opens and there's like a syringe suction, and that's what pulls your air into the engine through the carburetor or whatnot. And the smart guys know that when that intake valve closes, it forces air back up. It pops that air column, right?
Okay,
and sure. It causes a pulse. And the really smart guys know how to, and same with when the piston hits the bottom of the travel and it starts going back up. If there's any valve overlap, if an exhaust valve's still open or something, some of that pressure is going to get out and go back up the intake, right? And what's it going to do? It's possibly going to disrupt fuel flow. Mm-hmm. It's going to definitely disrupt airflow. Mm-hmm. So Kazi looked at this, and the smart guys know how to tune the intake runner length, and that's why you see intake manifolds of various lengths, and tunnel rams and whatnot, because they're trying to capitalize on the length of that runner so that when that reversion happens, the reflex action actually enhances the air going back in.
Yeah, the same kind of concept for exhaust scavenging as well.
Exactly. Or like a two-stroke pipe, you know, on a motorcycle. Well, how do you measure what that pulse is or the strength of that pulse?
I don't know, Kevin.
I'll tell you.
Please tell me.
If you're John Kazi, you make a plastic intake manifold runner, and you drill a hole in it, and you stick your finger in, and you feel it.
Really?
And that's exactly what he did. So he built this prototype, R&D manifold with a big threaded plug in one of the intake bungs, and he fires up the engine, and he loosens the plug, and he's got his finger in the hole, and he's revving this thing up, right? And on top of that is a box where the carburetors are sitting, and it's clear plexiglass, and you're watching the fuel flow dance around and do crazy stuff. So he's seeing it, and now he sticks his finger in there, and you watch the video of his finger, and at lower RPM, it's kind of getting blown in the wind a little bit of that intake charge, but as they increase the RPM, pretty soon his finger is flailing back and forth to the point where you think it's gonna break.
Oh my gosh.
I mean, it is like a playing card in the spokes of a bicycle wheel. I mean, just... So he yanks it out and puts a glove on, tries it again, and he said that if he spun that engine, I think that engine was good to 7,200 or 8,000 or something. If he ran it that high and his finger was sideways, he probably would have broken a knuckle.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
That's amazing. Yes. No, I would have never thought that. Those kind of that backward force was so strong.
Well, and you got to think about the number of times that valve is opening and closing.
Yeah, exactly.
Per revolution that's causing
especially
it
at that high RPM,
7,200 RPM.
Right. So now it makes. Now we talked about it. Now that he discovered it, it makes perfect sense. Yeah.
Well, of course.
Yeah.
Did they say John Kazi discovered it?
Yeah, right.
I could have discovered that.
And that premise was known, but nobody really had a feel. Well, now a guy like him. So he was here on our stage, you know. He took time, and not only was he here on the stage, but to get here, it takes a pretty significant walk from the main part where his display is. So we, greatly appreciate the effort to come out here. But those type of people that can see past the limitations and say, well, how am I gonna do this? They're rare. And so the story of the finger and the intake was not one that we discussed in our roundtable because I knew that had been covered quite a bit.
I see.
But he talked quite a bit about some other fun things that they're working on. So
can't wait to see it.
Yes. So this to me was just a mind-blowing experience.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's definitely one that we're going to go back and watch the tape later and see what happened because, you know, I was partially trying to keep the conversation going and, you know, be aware of technical stuff.
Sure.
But it was amazing. So
nice. Very nice.
Yeah. So I think we've been here for a little while and we're towards the end of the show and I guess we're going to start breaking things down in a few minutes. So again, I'm glad we had the opportunity to bring Rod in.
Yeah, me too.
Pleasure to be on.
Before we do leave, though, another one of the sessions, and I don't want to let them all out of the bag because people need to check these out. Mm-hmm. These are going to be distributed through V8TV and on our YouTube channel, our website, and also through PRI. They're going to share them in newsletters and things like that. You were here this morning, Rod, for the drag week.
Yep, 7 days of brewery.
Table, and so were you, Mike.
Right.
And of all of them, you know, Rod and I go back. We met on the Power Tour a million years ago, and I think drag week... If I'm envisioning that if Rod's career and family life didn't go the direction it did where he had obligations, I think you probably would have been a drag week guy.
Oh, absolutely. You know, we had talked, I think it was probably our second year on Power Tour that we stopped at one or two different racetracks, and we all had fun, but it was more of a fun run than a really, let's see if we can knock down a hard time, because, you know, the thought in our mind is, I got to get up tomorrow morning, I got to drive 400 miles to the next stop. And,
right. You
know, those first couple of years that we did the Power Tour, those were long stretches of days. We were on the road for 8 hours. It wasn't, 150, 200 miles. It was 300-400 miles. So I think everybody kind of took care of it, but, you know, several of us in the back of our mind were thinking, how cool would it be to go to a drag strip every single day and just knock down a time? Or, you know, I think the big joke was, you know, I'd love to have people see my car driving on the Power Tour and come pulling in, and I bolt on a set of slicks and I pull up to the front line and, you know, pull the wheels a foot and a half, 2 foot off the ground. How cool would that be? And now they're doing it, you know. And
I think
and they're doing it.
Overheard you talking about that.
I don't know if I go that far, but, you know, I you look at them now and it's just surreal. The speed and the times that these guys are putting down in the unlimited classes, and they're going out there full tilt. This isn't let's see what we can do. It's right. We're going, you know, this is set on kill. Let's make it happen.
Yeah, the fact that those guys have cars that can go down the quarter mile that quickly is one thing. The fact that they can drive them all week long to the next drag strip and still race, That adds a whole nother level to
right.
it.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think that though they're probably not in the heat of traffic,
right.
there are times
right.
where they're in traffic.
Sure.
They're stop and go. They're not getting on the highway and running. Mm-hmm. They've got checkpoints they've got to go to. Mm-hmm. They've got pictures they've got to take. You know, there were some great stories, and I don't want to, you know, get any of those in, but there were some great stories about some of the trials and tribunes that happen on the road, the breakdowns, the camaraderie, mm-hmm. You know, what happens when, you know, who sleeps or who doesn't sleep that particular day.
Right.
And, you know, the co-pilots constantly doing tuning while they're driving, mm-hmm. just, you know, amazing stuff that, again, with the PRI, all of the products and parts that are available here, mm-hmm. They're being put on these cars, and they're doing 6 second passes and driving it 200 miles the next day to do it again.
Yeah.
Thank goodness.
And you know, I knew you'd be excited about that one because we had Dave Schroeder, who won it last year with a nitrous car. Kevin Studaker, who has been running this thing for 9 years, he said,
yeah,
right?
He said
with
wow.
an LS7 72 Chevy wagon.
Nice.
And Freiberger was in it again, and so was Brian Lones. Mm-hmm. And who else did we have at that one? That was everybody, I think.
That was
yeah, right.
Yeah, yeah.
And, you know, Rod, as you talk about the ability to see the parts that make the cars and go, you know, kind of go shopping for those parts here, my analogy is I think we went shopping for people here.
Absolutely.
You know?
Absolutely.
I didn't do the final total of how many people we had on this stage at different times. Our biggest session was today. We had a road race, you know, round table. We had seven of us at once.
Mm-hmm.
So again, I just really want to say how grateful I am to PRI for allowing us to do this, and to all the people who spent time with us here on this stage, took time out of their day, you know, took time out of doing business.
Absolutely.
To come here and do nonsense
right.
you know, with us. So thank you for that.
Yeah, I mean, the key to remember is that it is a trade show. You know, these companies are here to, you know, showcase their product to race teams, to machine shops, to wholesalers, retailers, and to Kevin's point, they're, you know, taking a 15-minute walk, not to mention an hour time frame on stage, mm-hmm. and then, you know, there's usually some camaraderie and conversation after each one of the seminars and roundtables. So, you know, it's an investment for them. And it's great that they, you know, they believe in connecting to folks that are outside of the trade industry, which we're going to be able to bring that to them. So,
their end customer.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Or I'm going to get a ton of hate mail Monday morning, emails and phone calls saying, "Hey." Nah, I hope not.
I put an extra mile on my pedometer to come to your seminar
yeah,
today.
Yeah, right. See, we're there for people's health.
Yeah. Right, right.
Sonny Leonard was. Again, a legendary racer, engine builder. If you go to his website and look at the accomplishments on your phone, it takes about 5 scrolls to get through.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, this guy's been, you know, setting records in every possible race category for years. And he built the a charity engine that was raffled off for the Victory Junction Children's Charity mm-hmm. this year in association with Sun and Machines. And I have yet to hear the total, but previously, I think the grand total of ticket sales for a charity engine was about $50,000, and they had that beat yesterday before the last day of ticket sales and before the credit card sales.
That's
that was
phenomenal.
All cash. And Sonny is in his 70s now, and he doesn't need to come talk to us. But he not only made his way over, he got bum directions and went to two other wrong places and still came here. He didn't say, you know, to heck with you guys. And share time. So again, super fortunate to have that time. And that is a video that people will be able to see that we captured. So
very cool.
Yeah, it's been a great time.
Absolutely.
So, you know, as far as the PRI moment for me was the whole 3 days. You know, it was not just one.
Nice.
Yeah.
This is my PRI moment.
there you go. Well played.
So thank you.
Yeah. Your show wasn't as cool as ours.
We got to spend a little bit more time. Well, I got to spend a little bit more time out seeing the manufacturers and talking to the folks out there. Kevin was pretty well locked down to the stage, and you know, we got a little bit of time kind of after hours to sneak around and look at some stuff. But I think you definitely got to make sure you put this on your list for next year to spend an extra day to visit some of those manufacturers and get some great interviews for V8 Radio watching here as well.
Yeah,
absolutely, absolutely. All right, gentlemen. Well, this was fun.
Yes,
again, appreciate Rod being our live guest victim today, and the invitation's wide open, man. Any time. So appreciate
certainly
it.
Appreciate it for sure.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. You know, Mike and I always talk about trying to get more of our crew members in on these, but it's usually a geographic or technical challenge.
Yeah.
But I think we got to make a point of it of getting the V8 team in the show, the ones that are willing to burn some time with us.
A good team member spotlight.
Oh, yeah, totally. Yeah. Absolutely, absolutely.
Definitely need to capitalize on those five listeners and have them turn into the guest, right?
Yeah, totally.
Rod,
totally.
You get to make five new friends today. Out of this whole thing. So, yeah, Rod wins the spotlight. So if you you like listening to V8 Radio, you can find it on iTunes. You can subscribe there, Stitcher Radio, Google Play, of course, our Facebook page, the website, v8radio.com. And who am I forgetting? Is that any of them?
No, that's it.
Yeah, right on. And this one maybe on the video side on YouTube.
Yeah, perfect.
All right, well, I'm Kevin Oosty for Rod Uechner and Mr. Mike Hubal Clark saying keep the shiny side up, and we will see you maybe be seen next time on V8 Radio. Hit stop. Hit the record button again. Yeah, again.
Then hit stop again.